On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we talk about Colton Miller's absolutely money deal for all parties involved. We tell you why Gabe Jackson will not succeed in Seattle. We react to Max Crosby's comments about the defense and John Gruden, and Soto and RJ go 12 rounds on the same old topic as Derek Carr, the QB the Raiders need. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we love you subscribing, rating, and commenting on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
Raiders! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags, episode 20, right? Only one more episode away from being able to drink. We're really moving along. I'm RJ Clifford, he's Juan Soto. And Juan, I can promise you, I guarantee that this is me. This is RJ Clifford. I'm not an imposter. I'm not smoke and mirrors. I'm not some Russian bot, despite the fact that my Twitter was hacked this weekend. It is actually me, Soto.
I don't know, man. It's like the bizarro you. You got a beard and shit. I don't know.
It's like how there's like evil Spock from Star Trek, and it was just him with a goatee.
Yeah.
This is not hacked RJ because I have a beard. So if anyone got a direct message from me saying, hey, click on this link for a funny video, don't, because I got hacked.
Going to all those sites from your phone, I think it just messed you up.
See, I only go to one dirty site. I keep it. That's I'm very disciplined. But the good part about getting hacked, though, so like apparently when I got hacked, I didn't post anything. Like whoever hacked it, like he changed like the username, so I couldn't get back in. They didn't post anything. They sent direct messages to people saying, "Hey, click this," and it tried to get them to get hacked. The good part about it was that I had like 20 people texting me like, this doesn't sound like you. Did you send me a Twitter message? Because this doesn't sound like you. I don't know what's going on. I'm like, no. I was hacked. Don't click it. But I got to talk to like 10 people that I haven't talked to in years. So I got to catch up with a lot of buddies that I haven't talked to in forever. So nice. It was nice. You know, I should probably get hacked like once a year just so I can catch up with everybody, you know?
I'll talk to my Russian neighbor across the pool there. Mm-hmm. See if they can get it done.
Yeah, like Michael Bisping sent me a screenshot of him calling the Russian bot a C word on the direct message. I got to catch up with Kenny Florian, and it was great. I'm going to get hacked more often.
Oh, Ken Flo.
Ken Flo.
I saw Kenny Florian at one of the first, Eddie Bravo, the EBI Invitational. I think it was like number 2 or 3. We had a quick conversation. I said, hey, we have a friend in common. RJ Clifford, he's like, oh yeah, he's a good guy. I'm like, come on, man, just be real with me. He's not around. Like, I'm not gonna say anything. And he wouldn't crack. God damn it, he's a gentleman. He wouldn't crack.
He is a professional. He will not tell you the truth about me and what a jerk I am when I don't have a microphone in front of me. We're going way off topic here, but total sidebar. Congratulations, Kenny Florin. He's gonna do play-by-play for Professional Fighters League. So he's gonna be back.
Oh, good for him.
Back on the mic. Yeah, he's the jujitsu element of MMA play-by-play these days hasn't been great because it's just not like jujitsu guys, right? Like Bisping's a striker. Daniel Cormier's a wrestler. Paul Felder's a striker. Like, and they're great.
Joe Rogan doesn't do a lot of commentary.
And Rogan just does like, he only does pay-per-views and he does it like only like the specific Eddie Bravo type of jujitsu terms.
Yeah.
Having Kenny in not the UFC booth, but another booth is going to be great. Well, the big news this week for the Raiders is we talked, I think it was 2 episodes ago, we were talking about Colton Miller and we're like, yeah, so like, you know, the line's cheaper and Colton Miller's turning a rookie contract.
Pay him, man.
He's going to cost pretty soon. He's like, yeah, he's going to cost and we're going to have to pay him. Well, lo and behold, bam, via Jeremy Fowler.
I love this move, man.
ESPN, Las Vegas Raiders and offensive tackle Colton Miller have agreed to a 3-year extension worth more than $18 million per year. $42.6 million guaranteed at signing, and it goes through 2025 because it comes in after his 5th-year option.
Yeah,
so
extension.
It's great in the fact that when this next season where the salary cap is really low because of COVID, he's still on that rookie contract, when the new TV money comes in the next season or two,
$100 billion,
bam, 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 that's when his pay bumps. So it's built around how the salary cap's going to go. So it was nicely built, and we get to hang on to fantastic Bruin.
Smart, smart, smart. They did it with Carr. They did it with Waller. They're doing it here. Your main guys that you want to keep, you extend them early. You don't fuck with the cheap contracts coming up. You leave those the same. You extend them to what it seems like it's going to be a big deal. Derek Carr was like the highest paid quarterback for like 7 days or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, he's what, number five-ish around there right now. Mm-hmm. He won't be top 10 at the end of the season, yeah, or when the next go around comes free agency, he's not going to be in the top 10. So, and he's still up there in production. So yeah, man, it's a good deal. It's a good deal.
My very first reaction to it was like, wow, 18 mil. Like, that's a lot. I mean, we're not going to lose him. But then after like 10 minutes of kind of like thinking about it, I was just kind of mentally digesting it. I was like, oh, this is great. He's like, you brought up Derek Carr. Like, when he first signed, you're like, he was the highest paid quarterback in the NFL for like 45 minutes. Now his contract's great. Now it's super manageable. Like, he's like totally.
Yeah, GMs are getting the hard ons over that contract. Like, damn, dude. Like,
wonderful contract, much. Right? It also kind of reminds me of, like, the Darren Waller deal. Like, yeah, right when he caught the glimmer of like, wow, this guy's going to be something for us, we signed him to a long term deal, and he's getting $6 million.
Pretty good.
One of the best offensive weapons in the AFC. It's an amazing. Thank God he's like such a good dude and so loyal, because he should be back. I'm like, I'm gonna want three times that moving forward, or I'm not showing up to camp. Like, he could pull that if he wanted to.
Yeah, he's still young too. We're gonna have to pay him one more time if we.
Yeah.
Want
oh
to
yeah. Him. Colt Miller will probably have to pay one more time too. So it's like.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's what, 25.
We're banking on Colt Miller continuing to develop, because I would say at this exact stage, you're like, that's kind of a lot. But if he continues in the way that he's going, the left tackles are only going to get more and more expensive, yep, as each season goes on. This was the perfect time, perfect contract. Again, right when I looked at it, I was like, that looks like a lot. But when you kind of do the math and see how it spaces out and see where the cap's going to go, I think we're going to look back on this contract 3 years from now the same way we look at Derek Carr's contract and be like, that's
a good one.
That was smart, smart. We trash Mayock and Gruden on their contracts often, when they certainly deserve it oftentimes, but you got to give them credit when they really believe in a guy, a young guy, where they think he's going to be a cornerstone of this football team. They lock him up early to contracts that look like a lot at the time, and then look like steals 3 years down the road.
Yeah. You know, it makes sense. It's a good smart move. And when you see a cornerstone piece, that's what you want to do. You want to get him. You want to get him early. You want to pay him early, so you don't have to pay him the going rate when his time comes. And he's like, "Oh, great! Now I get the cash in." Like, don't even let him cash in. Give him what people might think is a lot right now, and it may be, but next year it's not going to be. It's not going to be a lot. And one thing that we haven't really talked on was Gruden is doing a lot of something very non-Gruden-esque with the defense. Like, he put
looking
a lot
at
of
it,
young
paying attention, acknowledging its existence.
He put a lot of young pieces in the defense, and normally he doesn't really do that. Normally he uses his draft picks to put pieces together. And, you know, I remember a couple of years before his last year with the Raiders, he traded away a lot of draft picks. He would package together to move up to get certain guys, or he would trade draft picks to get players back.
Yeah.
He hasn't really done that in the last few years. He's really looking for that long-term success, especially out of the defense. That's one thing that I wanted to bring up really quick.
I think he recognizes how the game's completely changed with rookie contracts.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And we're talking about him making these sound decisions, him and Mayock making these sound decisions moving forward with these contracts, with these cornerstone guys. It's a little bit of a departure from the old Gruden style.
Old guys, big money.
Guy I know. I don't want these rookie guys. Let me just trade away these draft picks. They're useless for me. They're not going to play the first year anyway. Mm-hmm. I want to win right this second. Well, that's great. But then what happens, you know, the year after they go to the Super Bowl, they don't even make the playoffs for another, 15 years.
Yeah. So props to Colton Miller, props to the Raiders, props to this O-line. It's a real big success. I think it's an underrated success story for Tom Cable and the offense in that line, in the sense that, you know, when Colton Miller started his rookie year going through injuries that some people knew about, some people didn't, and didn't play great. Right. People thought, oh, it's kind
yeah,
of,
yeah, it wasn't good. He was on kind the right of a side,
bust, you know, why, yeah. You know, what are we doing? And then he just got better and better, better and better every single season. And, you know, like we've been saying on this show, you know, the last couple of shows, Tom Cable's the one guy on his coaching staff where it's like, okay, I trust you. I trust you. You've proved it.
He knows what he's doing. He's the one coach that I see that is does a good job of development. Like you said, getting better every year. Those young guys, Denzel Good, he wasn't that when he first started with us. He wasn't what he is now. John Simpson, even for all his ups and downs, played better as the year went on. Revitalized Richie Incognito's career, where he got, you know, he got another contract, and he's back. It's a good thing to have. If you don't want to spend a ton of money on a specific part of your team, having a great coach that can develop is a must. And we have that on the offensive line.
So before we move on, you know, you've noticed, people who've been watching the show for a while, specifically on YouTube, you've seen that we've got kind of a uniform, right? You have the same Raider hat, got the white, the logo pops, looks great. I got the black on black hat
all day.
Doubles as my work hat, because I got a work hat that's black on black, because I got to wear all blacks. And I got my game day hat, which is the same, right? Which is a little newer, not as beat up. But considering that UCLA Bruin Colton Miller got a giant contract, also that Andre James, UCLA Bruin, our new starting center, and because UCLA is in the final four, from the first four to the final four, I'm gonna change things up a little bit.
Oh, please don't do that.
And we're gonna change the hat for one show and one show only.
We're gonna lose a lot of.
Got my UCLA Bruin, UCLA, UCLA, fight. Like that soda, like that baby blue and gold. That looks sharp. People on the East Coast think this is a Boston Bruins hat because of the beat. No. UCLA, baby.
We're going to lose all the SC fans.
It is a great week to
be a
Bruin.
I'm an SC fan, guys. Don't not follow us. Don't unfollow us. Loser. Don't unsubscribe.
All right, from one offensive lineman to another one. So, obviously, Gabe Jackson got traded to Seattle and immediately became the best lineman on that terrible offensive
line. By a lot.
And so, you know, when you become a, you know, a member of that team, the team's like PR wing does their interviews with you, right? Like, oh, welcome to the team. And every single player says almost exactly the same thing. Oh my God, the fans here are the best. Oh my God, this organization is so upstanding. Oh my God.
Oh shit.
I can't wait to be a member of this family, right? The same BS that everyone says. And so Gabe Jackson, the same thing. He told the team's official website, the Seattle Seahawks official website, all I know is I'm excited to join the 12s and meet my other brothers. I'm excited about the team. The players that I know are there, the coaching staff, the fan base, the 12s. I remember playing against them and how loud it gets there. They win. I want to be a part of an organization that's like that. And a lot of Raider fans, Soto, went bonkers that he made that comment.
Yeah, that was a bitch ass comment. You know, if
was it wasn't, though? Was it though? Or is he just running through the same recycled things that you say every time you go to a new team, a new fan base, and you want them to buy your jersey?
Nah, man. Nah. He's taking direct shots. Whatever.
Explain yourself.
If he wants to play that game.
I think this is just standard issue PR. Are you taking it personally? Is he taking a shot at
I don't
Gabe
take
Jackson
personal?
Taking a personal shot at Juan Soto from the Ottawa Windbags?
Of me? Of course not. No. He is taking a shot, a passing shot or a parting shot at the Raiders organization for whatever reason. Don't know why, but he's doing it. And it's just not smart. I don't think when you're playing in a league like the NFL where things can change, he might be on the scrap heap next year. You never know. and we know who he is, and we know what we're getting if we bring him back for a smaller salary for whatever reason. You never know. You see these retreads all the time where a guy leaves for greener pasture or gets traded for whatever reason a few years down the line. Hey, you know what? I'm looking for a job. I'm here. I can still play. I got another couple years left in me. You want to give me a shot? I just wouldn't even touch that shit. Oh, because he's saying, oh, and they win. I want to be a part of a winning organization as opposed to what? Being a part of a losing organization? Like, you don't need to say it's, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just being too sensitive about it. But honestly, when you never know what's going to happen in the NFL, you never know where you're going to play. I don't think Trent Brown ever thought he was going to play for the Patriots again.
Yeah.
And he's right back there after, you know, a couple of years. So, I mean, I don't think it's very smart on his part. There's a way you could say something nice about your team and not, you know, say something shitty about another team.
See, to me, I thought it was just like mindless standard issue PR where you just say all these nice things, you know, and, you know, let's call a spade a spade. The Seahawks, they don't have a losing season under Pete Carroll. The Raiders have one winning season in like two decades.
Yeah, I get it. But it's wrong. You don't have to say that. You don't have to say it like, oh, and they win. It's going to be good to be a part of a winning organization.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't have to go that far. You didn't have to go that far. And they're a winning organization, and it's, you know, it's a good situation to be in.
How do you think he's going to do in Seattle?
I think he's not going to do great. Yeah. I think he doesn't have a Hudson at center and a Colt Miller, you know, on the other side. You know, it's the line is not good.
Yeah,
the line it hasn't been good for a while, and one of the things that you'll ask an offensive lineman is it's easier to block for a quarterback that's not as mobile because you know where he's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
When a quarterback is all over the place, it's all sometimes a little bit harder to block for him because you don't know exactly where he's going to be at any given time. And sometimes you block guys into him, into his path. And we'll see how he performs. We'll see how long he's going to keep that $9.5 million contract that he has. We'll see if he earns it over there. We'll see. You want to talk all that shit and you want to be part of a winning organization, go win and go. Let's see what you got over there. We'll see. See if the 12s love you after 9.5 million. See how many sacks you give up this year.
Yeah. I think you really touched on something there with blocking for Russell Wilson is so much more difficult than blocking for Derek Carr. Derek Carr is one of the fastest release times in the NFL. I'm looking at in 2017, he was the fastest in the NFL, 1.97. And he's been average, you know, he's been pretty close to the top, right? Yep. Doesn't really move around a whole lot in the pocket, gets rid of the ball quickly. That's a quarterback that makes his line look good, not a line that makes the quarterback look good. With Russell Wilson, like you said, he's running all over the place. You don't know where he is. He holds onto the ball.
He deep a lot.
Takes a lot of sacks, right? Yeah. Like Russell Wilson keeps complaining that, oh, my line's, why can't I get a good line? And it's true, his line's not great. But he also doesn't put his line in a great position. Like he has to have a phenomenal line just because of how he plays. So, you know, Gabe Jackson, I think he peaked with the Raiders. I think as good as he's going to look is, you know, with Tom Cable, with this type of offense, with next to Rodney Hudson, you know, with a team that he's got a lot of time with. I don't think he succeeds elsewhere. And I definitely don't think he succeeds in Seattle. We'll see. But I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think he's going to be there long-term with that contract for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's a story. Like here's something I've been trying to get to for the last three shows, but because it was free agency and there's news breaking every single day, and we had great guests. Yeah, we've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, but now we can finally get to it.
Finally,
the
windbags have come down.
It took me putting on a UCLA hat to be able to get to this, to make sure that I bring a little extra layer of joy and optimism and fun and childhood whimsy, if you will, as the UCLA Bruins head to the Final Four and Colt Miller heads to the, started looking for his next yacht. Max Crosby, Mad Max, was on Bussin' with the Boys, Will Compton's podcast for Barstool Sports. If you don't remember Will Compton, he was a linebacker for the Raiders three seasons ago, right?
Hey, big shout out to Max Crosby. He was in a wedding over the weekend and he was looking sharp.
Dude, he was dancing. He was moving, looking good.
That was a nice looking tux he had on. Good on you, man. That looked good.
Chain over the tux. I could not pull
that
off.
I love it. I could not pull that off.
But he went on there, and I highly recommend you guys, everyone, listen to it, because the bulk of the conversation about Max Crosby and his deals with addiction. He spent all of last off season in rehab or in kind of like a halfway house. What's it called? Like a recovery house or something
recovery
like
house.
That?
Yeah.
Recovery house where he's basically
sober
like
house.
Sober living house. He spent all of last off season like that. And it's something that he's been struggling with for a long time.
Good for him, man.
So we got him and Darren Waller as two shining examples of, you know, how addiction can affect you negatively and how you can recover and turn into a positive and all that. So that was the bulk of it. And I highly recommend you check it out. But it was the X's and O's and his comments on Paul Gunther, Gruden, Derek Carr that he had me most interested. I think when Max Crosby, and he'll talk about, you know, being a leader and things like that, but Max Crosby, I feel like at this point in his career, is more of a fan favorite than locker room leader. Not that he's not a leader at all, right? Like, you don't lead the team in sacks and no one cares about you. But I think people just love like the nickname, the hustle. You know, you always root for like the fourth round picks, you know, to succeed because it's always, you know, like if him and Clay Ferrell had exactly the same stats, everyone would love Mad Max and hate Ferrell because, you know, he was a fourth overall versus a fourth rounder, right? So when he speaks, I don't know if it has a drastic effect on the locker room, but I think fans and Raider Nation really pay attention and take what he says to heart. And I don't know if you've heard this yet, sort of the sound that was pulled, but when he spoke, like I listened, like I truly believe like, okay, he's speaking for himself. He's speaking for his team and he's kind of talking to us. So I don't know how you feel about him.
He was one of the guys that I was looking at, after we drafted him, like, okay, high motor kid, you know, one of these from a smaller school. Let's see if we can get him to produce. And his rookie year was the Hard Knocks year. And he sang T-Pain in front of his team when he had to sing. So yep. Excellent choice there. But his first preseason game, now he was a fourth round pick. It wasn't like he was more than likely going to make the team. Okay, well, he wasn't going to be a cap casualty or anything, or he's going to go a late cut. He was going to make the team. But he broke his hand in his first preseason game, and he's like, yeah, just club it up. Just tape it up, and I'll go.
The Hard Knocks year. So he saw what was happening.
First preseason game in the NFL, he broke his hand, and he's like, oh, yeah, just tape it up, make it into a club during halftime, and I can play on it. No big deal. Mm-hmm. And he did. He still played with it. He didn't have to. It was a preseason game. But he played the whole preseason. He played the whole year. And that hasn't changed as his status has gotten higher on the team. Yeah. As you saw last year, he was hurt. His shoulder was hurt. His hand was hurt again. The plate that they actually put in his hand was broken. He had to redo it. And his mentality has not changed. So this is somebody that you can build around. His production just needs to keep going up. If that production still gets higher and higher, this can be a cornerstone player, because not only is he somebody that multiple people can relate to, but he's a hard worker. He proves it on the field, plays hurt, and he produces.
He gets results, right? That's the bottom line, right? He gets results. So, you know, obviously with COVID, we've talked about it with Adam Hill multiple times on this show, how hard it is to get a vibe of what's going on in the locker room of any NFL team, because in non-COVID years, the media is in that locker room after every practice, after every game, bumping elbows with players, talking face-to-face, getting, you know, you can get the vibe of the room, get the juju of the room. We just don't have that this season, right? Like, it just doesn't exist because the access isn't really there. And so anytime anyone even sort of chimes in a little bit, we just jump onto it, like moths to a flame, because that's all we have, right? So like when Will Compton talked to, when Paul Gunther got fired, week 14 or 15, whatever it was. And then he chimed in for like 45 seconds and everyone jumped on it because that's all we had. Yeah. No one's talking. No coaches aren't talking. Players aren't talking. Trainers aren't talking. Nobody knows like what's going on. We can guess. Right. And you know, the things that we heard from like previous seasons when there was access, there's still weight there, but we didn't know. And so when Will Compton talked for like less than a minute, we're like, okay, this is all we have. So when Max Crosby touched on, you know, pretty much all the major themes of last season, I jumped on it. I couldn't wait to hear it and see what was going on. So he was asked about the team in back-to-back seasons, starting out strong and ending shitty, right? Starting real strong in two seasons ago, ending 7-9, starting out 6-3 last season, ending up 8-8, falling apart against the Dolphins and Chargers and the travesty that was the Falcons, off of beating the Chiefs, off of beating the Saints. And Max kind of more or less touched on what I think we all thought the problem was.
We're 6-3. We've beaten the Chiefs. We've beaten the Saints. We beat the fucking Browns. We've beaten all top tier teams. So just our confidence level was like, we couldn't do anything wrong. Like, we just fell in practice. Our confidence, it almost got to a point where, like, we were too fucking, like, we're like, oh, we got this shit. Yeah. That's what it almost felt like. And you could see it. Like, people started, you know, workouts, people aren't doing the same, you know, doing the same.
Do you feel like your guys got more loose about it?
Yeah, I feel like so, in a way. And that's something we talked about, you know, after the season. It's like staying locked in from second you get into training camp to week 17, we're fucking dialed. And that's something that bothered me. And that's, you know, it's tough.
So he said more or less what we thought was happening, right? Young team, not used to winning. They started liking the smell of their own farts.
It happened 2 years in a row. Like, if you didn't learn the first time, you're not going to learn the second time. It's going to be something that there had to have been something in that
locker room. About the third time.
There's something in that locker room that allowed it to happen again. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't maybe those players are gone now. Who knows? But there was something in that locker room that allowed it to happen a second time. And
see, I wonder if it's something in there in that locker room caused it, or the lack of something in that locker room allowed it to happen. Because I think the natural course of human nature is you're succeeding and you start thinking, oh, we're the shit. We're doing great. You know, like, you know, I don't need to do that extra rep. We're 6-3. Like, oh, like, I'm doing great. Like, it's natural for the hunger to kind of subside a little bit, just to start feeling yourself a little bit more. And it takes a great coach, a great team leader, you know, somebody to not let that happen, to like, just like point your, like, get the finger on your forehead and said, hey, motherfucker, you're not that good. You're not. Get your act together, get that extra rep in, wake up that hour earlier, watch that extra film, do it. And I think it was more, there wasn't someone or something or whatever doing that. And so, like, if you leave success in a vacuum, it's going to feel itself.
Mm. Let me tell you a little story.
Story time.
Way back, little Juan Soto is in third grade. He has a friend named Michael. Michael's a good buddy of his, but Michael has a habit of being a little too handsy. He likes to slap people in the face. In the face.
Sounds like a good friend.
Yeah. He likes to slap people playfully, right? Uh-huh. So I was walking, and he would always slap me. And he would always slap, like, try to slap box me, right? Yeah. And I was walking, and once I made it past the buildings, there was just a big park. So it was a big field, so I could see anyone coming, and I'm in the clear, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I'm good. I'm almost to the end of the building. I'm good to go. Once I get past that, he's not going to be able to sneak up on me. Mm-hmm. What happens? Michael's right there in the corner waiting for me and smacks me in the face. Fuck, I was almost there. I was almost made it where I could see everybody around me, mm-hmm. and he slapped me at the last second. Guess what happened the next day? Without even looking, I got to the corner and I just socked dick level, and I hit him.
I knew you were going to go dick.
I always go dick.
Even third grade Soto, I knew you were going dick.
He goes high, I go low.
Yep.
I learned, and I was in third grade. I learned the first time. These idiots let it happen twice in a row. Yeah. Come on, guys. That's the issue that I have. It happened 2 years in a row. So if you want to preach, let's not let it happen again. You were a part of both of them.
Yeah.
Okay? So either if you want there to be something that's different the third time around, then he needs to be the one to change. It can't be like, we need to change. Oh, you need to be the change yourself that you want to see in other people. So Max Crosby needs to be something different than he was the last two times this happened.
Yeah. I think and you even heard it from the team when they were like 6-3 and around that time, you know, like, I remember Derek Carr specifically did an interview and they're like, hey, you know, like, you guys are doing great. This is awesome. Like, mainstream media is really feeling them. Like, they played the Chiefs, so going 1-1 against the Chiefs, and like, oh, the Raiders are back. I was making like playoff parties. I'm like, oh, we're going to the playoffs, no question about it. Should we gonna have a party at my house? What are we gonna do? I started feeling it, right? Like, even I I was fooled. And even Derek Carr's like, oh, well, this team's different. Yeah, that happened last season, but this team is different. It's not going to happen again this season. And I think he just, because the team was different, I think it was fair. They were playing better than the season before. They were a little different, but not so different and better where you can just be laissez-faire with that mentality. And I think that's what happened is they're just like, oh, we're better than last season. There's no way we're going to fall apart again. If they fall apart again next season, if after back-to-back seasons of falling apart late, remember, last season, the hard part of this schedule, we did great. We did awesome. The tail end of the schedule, which was the easy part of the schedule, Falcons, Dolphins, like we'd already beaten the Browns, already beaten the Chiefs, already beaten the Saints. And then it's the tail end where we almost lose to the Jets. We fall to the Chiefs, fall to the Chargers, fall to the Falcons, fall to the Dolphins.
Jesus, the Broncos were the last second freaking game.
That was the last thing. If that happens again,
blow it up.
It's just a lost cause.
Yeah.
If that happens
again, whatever mixture you have in that locker room is not working. Anything that you have that you're not 100% on, it's got to go. Anyone that's in there in a leadership position has got to go. Anything. I don't care who it is. It's just not working. It's not working, and it's not going to work with that there. And that's when you have people that aren't normal. That's why I talked to Max Crosby. I don't know his dynamic back in the locker room and how he is, but if he's not the most vocal guy, he needs to be that guy.
Yeah,
he sounds pretty soft-spoken in his interviews. Maybe he's not that guy, the same guy in the locker room, but you know, if like Derek Carr, if he's not that like rah-rah type of guy, it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. It needs to happen. That's when you pull the other couple leaders on the team and say, guys, we need to shake these guys by their ears and tell them this is not happening again. We need to push harder. That's why I said maybe a month or so ago, Russell Wilson wouldn't have let the Falcons game happen. He wouldn't have let that happen that way. It wouldn't have happened. And I don't think it's ever happened to him before.
Well, he's also had that Seahawks defense to always lean on too. I mean, look,
what the offense ultimately was the bigger part on, of that, the game.
What ultimately falls on is the head coach. And that was the next thing that Will Compton asked Max Crosby. I asked him about, you know, John Gruden.
I feel like right. Gruden does a great job. Like, he, you know how Gruden is.
Oh, yeah,
like,
he's a stud.
On it 24/7 in the offseason. Like, I'm there rehabbing every day now. He pulls me in. I'll be in the training room yesterday. He's like, Max, come up here. I want you to fucking watch a little bit of film with me. I got some guys I want you to see. Like, little shit like that. Like, he's locked in fucking all year round. So, as a team, it's tough. There's so many personalities and there's so much shit going on that, like, it's a tough job to really win a Super Bowl.
Bro,
everyone's got to be fucking on the same page.
Oh, yeah, everyone.
Like, it's different.
So I think this is a good example, too, of why players love John Gruden. He's got plenty of faults. He hasn't had a winning season with the Raiders in this last, you know, three seasons with them. But players love him. And you know, Max Crosby used the example of him being a hard worker, right? Like, he's first one there in the morning, last one done, always working hard, always doing film. Hey, Max, blah, blah, blah. You know, humans were emotional creatures, and we make our decisions and we make our observations and our thoughts are ran by our emotions, but we rationalize our emotions with logical things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you know, like, I need to drink a beer because I had a long day. I need to relax. No, RJ, you're just lazy and you love booze. But you're rationalizing it by saying, oh, I got to relax. I've earned it. I've earned a beer. No, RJ, you're just a drunk.
Just like beer.
Exactly. Max Crosby, I think he loves John Gruden as a person. Energetic, happy. He knows what to say to make you feel good. Players love him. And he rationalizes by saying, well, I love him because he's such a hard worker. And I have no doubt all evidence points toward John Gruden being a super hard worker. But Max Crosby is able to overlook the clear faults of John Gruden. Bad contracts, falling apart late in seasons, ignoring the defense, not allocating resources correctly because he loves him, which is dangerous and good at the same time, right? If you're just kind of blindly following a guy regardless of results, it can't be great. But if you it's hard to put a price on playing for somebody that you love and playing for your head coach.
Especially playing in the NFL, man, where the consequences are, even if you're lucky, they're still going to be life-altering. Yep. To be a good leader, everyone who's an extremely hard worker isn't necessarily a good leader.
Yeah.
Because I think what's going on with Gruden is he works so hard that he does it. He has blinders. He's just here. Work, 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 work. Yeah. And he doesn't incorporate that around those around him, like Paul Gunther. I'm not saying that he didn't work hard, but he definitely didn't work as smart as Gruden does. Because his teaching, what they talk about is teaching, his game planning, all that stuff was nowhere near what Gruden's was. So why didn't he see this sooner? Why did he allow this to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just because he wasn't looking at it because he was so focused on what he wanted to be focused on. That's not good leadership, all right? I've been in a position where I've been in charge of people who were in charge of people, okay?
God help them.
In jobs. And yeah, right? Who the fuck hired me for that? And I would tell these guys, look, I'm never going to admonish any one of the people that report to you. That's your job. I'm going to make them, hey, it's all good. Don't worry about it. We're going to get this, you know, give them a couple of pointers here and there, whatever, make them feel good about themselves. You need to be the hammer. I can't be the hammer because I'm the one that's basically telling them which direction to go in. Mm. And John Gruden needs to have those people that are willing to be those hammers for him because he can't be the hammer like that. You don't really see those types of coaches that win long-term because like even the Belichick, you heard it's like, dude, these people, some of these guys didn't want to play for him anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, it's just too much. It's too much.
But Belichick's the most successful NFL coach ever. So it's like,
well, okay. How do you argue with the results? Was it because of him or was it because he had Tom fucking Brady?
This is obviously,
I'm not saying he's a bad coach.
This is obviously a question that's like never going to have an answer. Like how much of that dynasty was Bill Belichick? How much of it was Tom Brady? How much of it was Robert Kraft, who, you know, as much as I hate to say it, like runs a good corporation, like runs a good organization business. And that matters drastically too. You know, and that can go on and on forever, but like, I'm with you though. Like someone has to be the bad guy. And John Gruden has clearly chosen to not be.
Never. No part of it.
He won't be.
The thing is, but
he's not going to be the guy that calls with bad news. He's the guy that calls with good news, which is exactly fine. But you gotta have the bad news guys underneath you,
and the bad news guys have to have the players' respect. Mm-hmm. Have to. You have to put those little chips in the bank. You have to every time. I'm making you better. I'm making you better. I'm putting you in positions to succeed. I'm getting your feedback. We're winning. We're doing better. We're playing better. Those are the things that I could put in there. Now, when I need to pull some out to chew your ass out, I'm pulling from the bank that I've already built up with you as a coach and player. And that's why it's good to have a coaching staff that has multiple coaches on there who have head coaching experience. Because not only are they going to help coach up the team, but also their assistants as well. And it just makes a better atmosphere of teaching when you can do something like that and you don't mind being the bad guy. You can't be everyone's buddy and be an effective leader. It just doesn't work that way. You have to be able to push them when it's needed.
The next question from Compton was probably the topic we talk about the most on this show more than anything. And he asked Mad Max about Derek Carr and why so many people seem to hate him.
For me, it bothered me because I know Derek. Me and Derek have an awesome relationship. And he's like the one guy, if everyone just knew him and had a conversation with him,
no question,
you would feel like a piece of garbage trying to downgrade him. So he's the dude's in the building every day, 5 o'clock, first dude in the building. The dude is dialed 24/7.
And he's a quarterback, so you know he's busy, but he literally, bro, not a time goes by where he doesn't text back. Bro, you know what I'm saying? Never. Like he's the most genuine dude.
Yes, goes out of his way. And he's a great dude. And His play speaks for itself.
So again, like, remember when Darren Waller was asked about John Gruden on Good Morning Football when we played it, and Darren Waller didn't say, oh, he gets the ball to me perfectly. His accuracy is insane. He's a great competitor. He's like, he's a good guy. I want to play well for him.
Yeah, the team wants to play hard for him. The team of course, talking about Derek Carr. Talking about Derek Carr, not talking about
Derek Carr. Max Crosby, same thing. Good dude. Genuine guy. I love him. I love him like a brother. Didn't say, he gets the ball in the end zone. Oh, he puts up points and takes the pressure off of us, defenders. Like, it was all like genuine him as a human, which I love, because like, we know what his stats are. We know what his gameplay is. Like, we see the film, right? We can disagree on what it means sometimes, but we generally are on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah.
Derek Carr is a player.
For the most part.
But when that's the first thing you think of is he's a human being that I love and want to play for, that's almost exactly the type of praise I want teammates of my team to say about their QB1.
Makes sense.
That's all you got? That's all you got? You can't get any praise from Derek Carr from his teammates?
Look, man.
And hear it? Does it hurt you? Does it hurt your ears?
No, it doesn't. I don't hate the guy. That's the thing. I agree with most of it. Mm-hmm. And just a couple things that we disagree on. The problem is he's not talking about the things that are affecting this team. He's a genuine guy. He's a good guy. He'll text you back, this and that. He's like, no, he won't let us get into a funk. He'll get into people's faces and he'll make sure that everyone's doing what they need to do. He'll talk to the other leaders on the team and make sure that they keep their guys accountable. That's leadership. We talked about that with Gruden. You can't be the Mr. Nice Guy all the time and be an effective leader. Same thing with Carr. He can't be this, oh, hey, man, everyone's buddy. I'm this and that. I'm going to lead by example. Because
you can be, as long as there is another rah-rah leader, as long as there's an in-your-face guy to compliment.
And if it's not there, then you have to be that. If you're looking around, there's no one else there, then it's got to be you.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the next question from Will Compton, asking about like the defense and Max Crosby's role as a leader.
Crazy. Especially when the D struggled.
The defense, we struggled heavily. We went through coaching changes.
You did?
I did a little
segment on that.
Yeah. We had a new coach. We had a bunch of new pieces that came in. No off season. Every level we had new guys playing that have never played together. Communication wise, it was not where it needed to be. Leadership wise, wasn't where it needed to be. And I take responsibility. That's something I definitely am going to work towards, and being a better leader and more vocal.
So it sounds like Max recognizes that part of the collapses the last two seasons, part of the reason why the D was so terrible, is a lack of leadership on there. And I think with Max Crosby, because he was only a second year player playing hurt. And as we found out in that interview, he was in basically rehab the entire off season. Yeah. I can't blame him for thinking, all right, like it's not my place to like tell Corey Littleton and Nick Witkowski, Clay Farrell, what to do. Like, it's not my place. Now he's seeing after this season and seeing that like, well, no one else is doing it. I need to be that guy. I need to be the leader on that defense, because no one else is doing it. And now, he's a third year player, leads the team in sacks. It's like, you are the guy now, Max. And that's my type of leader, not a guy that has to be in charge, not the guy that craves like the C or the power, but a guy that recognizes a leader is needed and will step up and fill that role for the greater betterment of the team.
And the thing is if you're a true alpha, if you're a true leader like that, you're not going to back down. You get these guys that are like, oh, maybe someone should say something. I'll say something. Yeah. As soon as someone else says something, oh, he's saying it now. Okay, I can step back now. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're not going to be competing factions anymore with this leadership thing. The whole coaching change thing is a cop-out. They were shitty for 14 games, and they had a new coach for two. So that's a stupid cop-out. Don't say that anymore, Max.
Nobody
had an off season. Okay, stop it. You guys didn't play well. I think it's because your leadership on defense, as far as the coaching goes, was terrible. The communication was bad because you had 35 fucking calls on third downs. Everything in the playbook was open. You had no game planning, shit like that. That is the reason why you were shitty. So let's not look at, let's try to pull all this little peripheral stuff in to make it seem like, no, you were shitty because you played shitty. Let's just call it what it was.
Yeah.
Are you a shitty defense? Not necessarily, but you played like one.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens in the future.
It's like you're like, you knew what we're doing and we're segueing perfectly, because like we talked about when Paul Gunther got fired in week 14, whatever it was, Max Crosby was, Will Compton was literally the only guy on the inside that commented on it. No one else in the defense did. Right. And it was a guy that, you know, was playing for Nashville at the time, still is, but he was the one that actually chimed in on it. And he talked about Paul Gunther. And that's how we learned that his defense was super complicated. Every week there was 25 to 30 new plays just for third down. And Will Compton, because, you know, players, they never want to like just trash a coach, because that's just a bad business move. Because you never know if he's going to become defensive coordinator, you know, for Jacksonville in 2 years.
I think Gunther was a pretty safe bet to trash. I think it was pretty safe.
And yet no one really truly trashed him. Will Compton was the one that did closest, because he has a podcast and he knows he has to deliver to his audience and he has to give them something, right? He's the only guy that said anything, let alone anything negative or positive. So he came in, but even he was like, you know, he was tiptoeing around the tulips a little bit. He didn't want to trash him too bad, because it's a bad, you know, he could be the guy that hires you one day, yeah, whatever it may be. And so when he did, you know, paint him in a semi-negative light, Will talked about what happened next.
PG called after that segment.
Okay. And I was nervous. I was definitely nervous about it, because I'm like, he called. Yeah, he called. He's like, hey, Comp, you know, give me. Yeah, yeah.
I don't blame him.
He's like, hey, Comp, it's PG. Give me a call back when you get this. I'm like, oh, man, he's calling about that episode.
Yeah.
And the person inside me did not want to call him back. Yeah. But I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, if I'm going to talk about him and I'm going to talk about that issue on the pod, then I need to have the stones to call him back and talk to him.
That's it.
And so, you know, we had a productive conversation.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a big fan, and rightfully so. Like, it's fair. Like, and it's not, it's never on just one guy.
So even Will kind of pulled it back a little bit. It's like, oh, it was fair. He was mad, and it's not on everybody. It's like, I think you made it pretty clear, Will, exactly what you thought about Gunther.
Look, man, never met the dude. Probably will never meet him. Probably will never speak with him. But that's just horseshit. Come on.
What is?
If you're going to put it out there, know what you're putting out there. Own what you're putting out there. Just because you talk to the guy and the guy makes you feel bad for whatever reason, I'm not for sure you can beat the dog shit out of Paul Gunther. But it's like, come on, man. Just own what you're saying. If he was that bad as a coach, which the numbers showed he was that bad as a coach, he seemed to me like he was a John Gruden for the defense, as far as it, when he had the veteran players on his team, he was able to put together a decent squad, okay? Yeah. But when he had the young guys that he has to develop, which John Gruden doesn't really like to do either, it was an atomic bomb on the defense.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. And they weren't getting better in second year, third year in the system. They weren't getting it. They weren't communicating. They weren't getting better. And it's like, come on, man. If he's the problem, then say, look, I had a talk with him. He was upset. And, you know, I think anyone in that position would have been upset if someone was talking about you, the work that you put a lot, you know, the production and the output of a lot of your hard work, and you got fired because of it and all. I understand why he was upset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the players have to go out and perform. But I still say that there's things that the coaches can do to make the player's job easier. That is something that along the lines of you still be, okay, you know what? I was kind of hard on him. I understand why he was upset, but not totally backtracking on what you're saying. Oh, it's not one person's fault. Get the fuck out of here, man.
Well, he's not wrong, right? Like,
I understand what you're saying. Of course,
we're hoping Paul Gunther was the problem, right? Like, that's best case scenario for the Raiders is Paul Gunther was a terrible defensive coordinator, overcomplicated everything, and got the worst out of his players. Because our defense isn't going to be completely rehashed. Like, Yannick Ngakoue is on. Great. Hopefully, fingers crossed, pray to God, we get a veteran free safety. Other than that, other than having 97 new defensive tackles, it's basically the same defense. So I think we're hoping Paul Gunther was the problem. But if next season our defense is just as bad as the last few seasons, Paul Gunther's vindicated. Paul Gunther is vindicated.
If the queen had a dick.
It hurts to say it, doesn't it?
It
was like a metaphorical kick to your taint when I said that.
It's not that.
You see it in your eyes.
I get what you're saying, man. And it's like you're trying to hedge your bets. Like, oh, well, you know, it's just no. Paul Gunther was a problem. Was he the problem? We'll see. But he was a huge problem. When Will Compton tells us what goes on in his game plan, quote unquote game plan, and what goes on, and we see it on the field, idiots like you and I were able to say, "Dude, these guys don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're talking right up to the snap. They're moving around. They're pointing in different directions. They're getting mad when the ball's in the air. Like, what the fuck? Who's supposed to be there?" That's a problem with leadership, and that's a problem with teaching and development. And if what Crosby was saying and Compton was saying is true about the way Gunther ran a defense, he was a major problem with the defense. Now that we have a better leader, a better teacher, Gus Bradley, that has been proven to be building top defenses, there's no way it's not going to be better.
Well, it can get worse, right? Could our defense get worse?
They can give up 100 points a game. I mean, but...
Oh, God. Sacrilege. Shut your mouth, Soto.
I know, right? What the hell's wrong with
me? Let's say things we can't take back. So in our rundown, you put in giant bold letters, Dan Orlovsky, to be a true franchise quarterback, you need to be able to win games when there is a mess around you. What are you getting at here?
So he was talking about Justin Fields, about how he feels that he can be a franchise quarterback. He specifically talked about the Michigan State game when the entire offensive line for Ohio State was gone. A lot of his receivers were gone. It was basically just him and like one running back, and that's it. Everyone else was the second, third string guys. And playing against a decent Michigan State team, threw for 200 yards, two touchdowns, ran for 100 yards, a couple more touchdowns. They won the game. Mm-hmm. He said, once I saw him be able to take that team on his back and win that game, that solidified it for me. This is Dan Orlovsky saying it, that he can be a franchise quarterback. When there's a mess around you, can you still win? And I thought, you know what? We always talk about Derek Carr and his stats and this and that. One thing that we don't talk about is he got those stats with just about three quarters of the cap on the offense. Now, when the cap was a little bit more even early in his career, he still wasn't doing great. You know, he wasn't doing as well as he is now, but the team wasn't winning games. So that's one thing is he that franchise quarterback that's going to take you to that next level and be that perennial guy if you get a better team around him? Without having to spend three quarters of the cap and get the stats.
I think you're full of shit, and this is why. Cap is one thing, right? Like, cap means what you should deliver on. We had the most expensive offensive line in football last season. We should have had the best line of football last season. We didn't. One, because 40% of the line didn't play because everyone got hurt. You know how many snaps our starting offensive line played together last season? Not how many games, not how many quarters, not how many minutes. You know how many snaps the O-line played together last season?
It was like 11.
Three. The opening drive of the opening game. After that, they never played together the rest of the season. Trent Brown out forever. Richie Incognito only played two games. Fell apart, right? So the line wasn't what it was paid to be the best, but it wasn't. Receivers. We had a first, our very first pick, our first round pick. Henry Ruggs didn't really deliver. Our other receiver that was supposed to be great, our rookie receiver, Bryan Edwards, never really came, well, whether because of game planning or not, who knows, but he didn't really deliver in his rookie year either. Josh Jacobs, he went all pro. He only averaged 3.9 yards a carry. He regressed as a runner this season. His long was 28 yards. He didn't have, I don't think he had an all pro year. I love me some Josh Jacobs, but
we agreed on that.
It wasn't like a running game carried this team. So the line was not performing and completely injured and was a patchwork quilt the receivers are high, you know, draft picks, underdelivered. I mean, it took Nelson Aguilar's best career ever. Like, Derek Carr made Nelson Aguilar. Nelson Aguilar didn't make Derek Carr this last season. And even then, Aguilar didn't even have 1,000 yards. He had Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow on third down. And he had an amazing season. So this idea that Derek Carr had everything going for him, best line in football, off, weapons everywhere.
He had a good season. He didn't have an amazing season. He was number 10.
He had a very good season, specifically with the tools that he had at his disposal. And playing from behind all the time because his defense was atrocious. Like, so just to say, like, oh, well, you know, Derek Carr had everything going for him, and he, you know, and that's why he succeeded. No, Derek Carr did not have everything going for him last season at all.
Okay. There is
I'll take your apology.
There are things that we will never see eye to eye on. And the problem that I have is stats are king for you until they're not. And oh, well, Rodney Hudson, he wasn't the top 10 in win rate and pass blocking and rush blocking, but look at all his intangibles. Look at all the other stuff. So now the intangibles
said,
mean a lot.
No. I said the objective stats back up Rodney Hudson. Never got hurt, never allowed sacks, which is huge, right? And plus
But compare that to other centers, though. Compare that to other centers. That's when the stats mean something.
How many? I don't know the stats, but how many centers never get hurt and never allow sacks?
Oh, let's go ahead. I'll have that for next week.
Do that math for next week. I'm legitimately curious, right?
Okay.
So two stats.
Okay. Now you're saying one and two. This one, just two stats. Now look, this is what I've been saying for a long time about Derek Carr. Okay, Derek Carr does not take the temperature of the game and play accordingly. Derek Carr is a plug and play system quarterback. Does he play well in that system? Yes. Can he play well in a system? Yes. Can he play well when he needs to play outside of the system? He does not.
He did play outside of a system. The system was supposed to be an in your face, unstoppable run game by an all-pro running back, a fantastic fullback, and the highest paid offensive line in football. It was supposed to be that. He was supposed to have the rookie version of Tyreek Hill and Henry Ruggs.
This is what I'm talking about. We're seeing two different things. You're telling me that he just winged it every single play? No, he's playing the plays that are called. And if the play calling works and the play calling is good, he's going to be successful. And that's John Gruden putting him in a position to succeed. The issue that I have is when games like Atlanta happen, when games like the fucking Bucks happen, when it's 14-10 in the middle of the second quarter and he goes three and out the rest of the half, and the Bucks keep scoring touchdowns and he's throwing the ball away on third down and he's throwing the ball short on third down. What he needs, he knows these guys are continuing to score and I need to push the ball and I need to make plays outside of his offense. I need to make sure that I keep my team in the game. He doesn't do it. He sticks inside the parameters of the offense. And then a 14-10 game becomes a 21-10 game. And then the Bucks get the ball back. They score again, 28-10, and it's over. And it's over. And it's over because our team actually got some stops. They actually got a couple of stops in the second quarter of that Bucks game. But it was the offense who let us down, who wasn't scoring the points, who was getting those three and outs. Now, granted, the Bucks defense is a phenomenal defense. They weren't that at that time of the year. They became that later, but they were still good. What I'm saying is when he needs to make those plays outside, when he's like, I need to make this play happen because I know the temperature of this game, he doesn't do it. He's checked down Charlie.
He does do it.
He's shitting in the red zone.
The Jets game, last second Hail Mary. He has so many fourth quarter and overtime comebacks in his career. I don't have the exact numbers in front of him, but he's one of the leaders in the league since he's been in the league.
I'm telling you.
Comeback win.
It's in the offense. It wasn't like the Raiders were down.
It's in or out of the offense, these comebacks, these great throws that he's done to save games? How do you know that it wasn't him checking at the line of scrimmage or John Gruden saying, all right, here's your three plays, you pick one, or a play falling apart and he went a certain way? You might be 100% right. He's literally a robot. He's Pinocchio, and John Gruden's the marionette, and that's just exactly what's happening. Like Jared Goff in with the Rams or something. It could be that. Or all these great comebacks and his 101 quarterback rating this season and his 7.9 yards per attempt this season, all these great stats that he put up could be all him too. I don't know, and you don't know, but you are assuming it's the worst when I don't know. So I'm going with what I do know for sure. 4,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, 101.4 quarterback rating. Like
these comebacks that he's having that you call so that you talk so highly of, these are back and forth games. These aren't games where he brings teams back and he makes these plays.
Of course, the defense isn't doing it.
I understand what you're saying, man. But when you have a bad defense or defense that gives up a lot of points, you're going to have that opportunity if you're clicking and the other team has a bad defense as well. Mm-hmm. If you're clicking and you're scoring and they're back and forth games, it's basically who gets the ball last. And it just happens, you know, the Raiders are in those games a lot because they're giving up a lot of points and they had a good offense. So so to say, oh, well, my point is shit because he has all these comeback wins. You have to take a look at why. I'm giving you a specific game. This is a microcosm of what Derek Carr does and what he doesn't do. And that's that Bucs game. That Bucs game got away from him because he would not push the ball down the field. He was check down Charlie. A punt is a win. I'm going to throw this, you know, ball 2 yards to my boy Witten. And when I needed 8. And what happened? He didn't take the temperature of the game at the time. And the game got away from him. And when it was 28-10, it was good as over because the offense was going to, the defense was going to still keep up, keep giving up points. And he wasn't going to be able to score enough. That's what I'm saying.
All I'm saying is every week you come back with like another reason to like crap on Derek Carr. And look, Derek Carr has, look, there are plenty of very fair critiques of Derek Carr. Absolutely. Fumbles too much, not mobile. There's certainly critiques.
Not a winner.
The defense isn't a winner. He runs a winning offense. But you always come in with something new, and it's always wrong. Like this Dan Orlovsky quote where it's like, well, you know, can he win when not everything's great going around him? He didn't have everything great going around him this season. He really didn't.
And didn't win either.
The offense was – that's not the defense. You know it was the defense. Stop it. Stop it. Deshaun Watson only won 4 games this season, half as many as Derek Carr. Obviously, that means Derek Carr's twice the quarterback of Deshaun Watson, right? According to your logic, he didn't win.
Well, let's take a look at the sample size of their first few years in the league. Who has more wins?
I don't know.
It's Deshaun Watson by a lot.
Deshaun Watson. They've also had J.J. Watt in great defenses. Raiders have had dog shit.
Okay.
You ready to do what up windbags, or do you want to keep squatting over Derek Carr? And
I want to talk about why the fuck did we sign Will Snead?
Because it was a $1 million 1 year contract. There's like there's no downside.
Yeah, the downside is if he takes snaps away from guys like Edwards and Ruggs because he's more comfortable, Gruden's more comfortable with him in the offense. That's great. You get another guy that you really don't need, right? And you retard the development of the young guys that you drafted very highly.
Well, look, he's not an X receiver, so he's not going to take snaps away.
In Gruden offense, you got to play all the receiver spots.
You have to have the ability, but that's generally like anomalies though, right? Like,
I don't know, man.
Hunter Renfro's in the slot, right?
Yeah, of course.
Almost every time, right? Waller's lined up at tight end. They'll move him outside. Like, they'll move Waller around as they should because he's
– and they should do it more.
Fucking brilliant. You can put him anywhere, right? You can have him hanging upside down 10 yards back and he's still going to
get open,
do a touchdown, right? If he's going to take reps away from anyone, it'll be probably Renfro in the slot. So – and again, I don't think I like it. It's another veteran receiver on a very young wide receiver core, and he's paid so little – and he's old enough where it's not like John Gruden's going to feel like, oh, I'm paying him so much money. I got to get him. I'm going to design plays for him and take him away from Ruggs. I'm not worried about it.
Where you fit in, though, like he's too old to play special teams. He's not going to want to play special teams.
He'll play in the slot in certain packages. You know, when they go like 4 wide receiver sets or, you know, something like that, like he'll.
If you go 4 wide and you don't have Waller out there as one of those 4.
He better be. Yeah,
Waller's exactly. So there's one, and then you have Brown as 2, Ruggs is three. So you're taking Renfro out and not giving Edwards any looks to give Snead looks? All right.
He'll be a rotational wide receiver. Right?
Like, we didn't even mention Zay Jones, poor guy. Right?
That's what I'm saying. Zay, if anyone is getting screwed over by this, it's Zay Jones. That's who's getting screwed. Not Ruggs or Edwards.
He's not going to be the fifth receiver. They're not going to make him the fifth receiver. Gruden has a hard
time. The top five receivers, like the five receivers are pretty obvious. Brown, Ruggs, Renfro, Edwards, Snead. Those are your five.
Yeah, but Snead's going to push back Edwards. He's going to take his looks, man. Edwards is a better player right now, I'm telling you.
Edwards is their only true X receiver. I don't think he's going to lose like massive snaps to Snead. They're just two different positions.
I hope not.
All right, ready to do some what up win backs?
I'm ready.
I like the ones we got this time.
They were good ones.
They're good ones.
You know what? Windbag Nation, thank you so much. I challenged you last week. Like, what the fuck going on here? We have like two good comments, and now we got some comments. Keep them coming.
Yeah, you can comment on us. You can hit us up on Twitter at the Windbags or Instagram at the Autumn Windbags or in the comment section of our YouTube. We'll answer to all of them. So this one, what up, Windbags? This is in response to an episode a while ago. It was our Al Davis versus the NFL 30 for 30 episode.
One of my favorites, actually.
Back in the 80s, I had a large cabinet company in Sacramento, and I did a ton of cabinet work for a developer named Wayne Valley. Some of you know who that is. Within the office that I dealt with, it was common knowledge not to bring up Al's name, as Wayne was so pissed off at him for basically stealing his ownership in the Raiders. Wayne was one of the founders of the Oakland Raiders. True story. That was probably my biggest criticism of that 30 for 30 Al Davis versus the NFL, was it didn't touch on how Al Davis just, like, he was one of three owners of the Raiders.
Yeah.
And just threw like brilliant Gordon Gekko secession business conniving, kicked out everybody, and he became the owner of a NFL franchise as like a non-bajillionaire.
I think he could just looked around and was like, fuck. It worked.
American dream. Davis did to snipe the Raiders from his business partners.
I think it would have added a lot of depth to that. I don't want to say Al Davis character because he's an actual person, but
yeah,
to the portrayal of Al Davis during that 30 for 30. They made him out look like a fucking saint, man. Like saint that was, you know, a little bit of mischievous, but like a Dennis the Menace type. I don't mean any harm. I'm trying to make it better for everybody. No, dude, you were kind of an asshole at times too. Let's just be honest, okay? I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but the truth is the truth. He was an asshole to certain people. I mean, he screwed Lane Kiffin out of his money.
He was ruthless. He was ruthless businessman.
And the thing is if they would have put that context in early, as they were building up Roselle as being this nice guy, salesman, LA kid, whatever, it would have been that kind of that a better good versus evil. But it's like the wrong guy. It's like the good guy, quote unquote, was doing all the right things, but going about it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And the bad guy was trying to get all the bad things done, but doing it the right way.
I understand why they didn't put it in the 30 for 30, because you got 90 minutes and you're trying to tell a story. And like, I've worked on documentaries. This should be its own. This should be its own 30 for 30 or its own kind of documentary.
It could have been a six parter like they did with the Bulls, a multi-part like they did with Tiger Woods, a multi-part like they did with Lance Armstrong. It could have been the Lance Armstrong was only two episodes. And this could have been that. And it would have been a lot better story, a lot more meat to it. Because basically, if you were alive during that time, it's nothing new that you didn't read in the newspapers.
Yeah. But even then, it's still kind of a little under the radar exactly what Al Davis did.
Well, exactly. Yeah, for sure. But the thing is, it's like,
this is who we should get on. This is who we should get on our podcast.
Hey, wait, talk about Al for a second.
I got to find the person who wrote the best version of that story, like who wrote it the best and most descriptive, and we'll get him on the podcast. Because I've read it. I don't remember where I've read it. I've heard it a couple times, like how Al Davis connived his way into getting the Raiders. The best person who wrote that will be one of our next guests.
Because it would not be fucking RJ Clifford. I'd be so pissed.
What if I write it?
I'm gonna freaking shit on it. Oh, terrible.
Next one from Titus Flavius Vespinacianus on YouTube.
That's awful.
The Raiders have eight.
You
pronounce this. Titus Flavius Vespasianus. If there was a hyphen between that I and A, then it'd be Vespasianus.
Vespasianus.
That's a spicy anus.
A very spicy
anus. The Raiders have 8 picks overall in this year's draft. Could you see the Raiders spending at least 3 picks on the offensive line, given Incognito's age, the need for right tackle, and the need for more depth along the line as a whole? Also, which level of the defense do you see as being the most in need of draft help? The secondary, linebackers, defensive line. Love the podcast. Go Raiders.
Go Raiders indeed. Thanks, Titus, man. Appreciate the love.
Good question. Well,
I believe that, yes, I can see them going heavy on the offensive line because even though they brought back Incognito, like he said, he's, you know, how many years is he going to play? Probably this might be his last year. Yeah. You need to get somebody that you know is going to be able to be good and the depth. You need
sad,
depth
but, sad but true. If he gets through this whole season uninjured, it's going to be a
miracle,
minor miracle. Like it'll be crazy if he plays at the level he did 2 or 3 seasons ago without getting hurt. Like that's very optimistic. Hopefully.
So for right now, what you're banking on, like what we're banking on too, if you're the Raiders organization, what you're banking on is for these young guys on the defense to start stepping up and those free agents to start, you know, pulling their weight. Mm-hmm. The defensive line has plenty right now. They have so many defensive linemen right now. It's ridiculous. Could you find an edge rusher here and there? Maybe, sure. If someone falls to you that you like.
But they're all in 1 year deals. All that whole defensive line, 1 year deals.
Yeah. And, but for this year, you have all those defensive linemen. You got to draft another defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless someone is super, super special, it drops to you. Yeah, maybe. But I think for right now, the secondary needs the most help. They're on the field the most. Because all you're seeing now is at minimum a 3 wide receiver set. Okay, so you're seeing more passing. You're seeing a lot more multiple receiver sets, 3s and 4s, sometimes even 5 receiver sets. And you need to have more DBs on the field. And they're not all going to hit. They're not going to do well. And you're not going to be able to keep all of yours either. So you need to always constantly. There was a few years ago, maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, I was watching the combine, and they were NFL Network was interviewing Deion Sanders, and they were saying, okay, so which teams out there need cornerback help? And he said, all of them. It was right around that time where it was becoming a lot more of a passing league and like the jump in yardage and quarterback stats. He says, all of them. Everyone needs cornerbacks. Everyone should draft at least 3 cornerbacks every year because you need them because you never know who's going to do well. And you always need to replenish because it's passing, passing, passing in the NFL. And the thing is, it's like he comes across like he doesn't know what he's talking about. But if you sit down and really process what he's saying, he's absolutely right. You can never have too many good defensive backs in a passing league. Never.
But you got to allocate your resources, right? So, yeah, you got 8 picks. And that's a lot. I don't know if we're going to sign all 8 of those rookies. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see what they do if they trade or trade down or trade up, whatever it may be. Like we'll start with the obvious. Like we're totally fine at tight end, wide receiver, running back, quarterback. Depth on the O-line is important. I think that first pick should be on a tackle, that right tackle.
There's 2 or 3 there that can really do well and start right away for a lot of years.
And there's really good. It's a great, great tackle draft. I mean, it is fantastic. Yeah. So maybe even two.
Even if you wanted to wait until the second round, you're going to get a decent guy. Guy's going to be able to hold it down.
You can get a rookie starter in the second round.
Oh, no problem. Right, you can get a rookie starter in the third round if one drops. If people start, you know, getting silly and you know, you see a lot of these linemen who aren't, let's say the top tier linemen, a lot of those second tier linemen drop and there's still a really, really good, nice player who can plug in and play a lot of snaps for you. And even in the third round, we got 2/3. We can move up into the second, maybe flip a couple of these thirds and move up again and get something nice. But yeah, it's a very deep class right now for offensive line. In the draft.
One or two picks will go to the offensive line, specifically right tackle. Linebacker, we need depth, but that's probably the unit most set in the, like for now and the future. We might pick up a free agent somewhere, like, you know. I mean, between like Morrow, Littleton, and Gutkowski, like, that's probably our best unit on defense. We do need depth. We'll see what we do at linebacker there. Now, this is where I disagree with you, because our DBs, even though, like, they're not good and we need help, they're all young. We don't need more youth back there. What we need is veteran leadership. So if we, what we need is a veteran free safety. So whether that comes in a trade, whether we use those picks to trade for a free safety or something like that, I don't want to draft more 21-year-olds to be our DBs. Like, we've got plenty of them. I want a veteran there. So I don't want to draft a bunch of new corners.
I don't want to keep corners that are no good. I don't care where we draft.
What we need is defensive linemen, right? Because we got Max Crosby, who will keep forever. Yannick Ngakoue was in a 2-year deal. All those defensive tackles we signed, they're all 1-year deals. Like, we got to start developing some defensive tackles. We got to start developing some ends. Like, even
how
though
many,
it's not a,
how many defensive tackles can you have on the roster though? You already have a ton on the roster. You're going to put more on the roster?
Well, what's the alternative? Sign 1-year deals every single year in perpetuity? You got to start drafting some.
Those 1-year deals are an anomaly because of the cap and what's going on this year. You only have so many defensive linemen on your roster. They already have a ton of defensive linemen. I don't care. I understand that it's draft capital, but cut your losses, man. Cut your losses. If these DBs aren't doing well, cut them. Let them go. Trade them. Get something for them. Whatever you can do. That's the mentality you have to have. The Pete Carroll mentality. Everybody competes. There's no starting lineups.
But you know as well as I do, they're not going to give up on Jonathan Abram next season. It's essentially a second year.
Hey, right? after this year, if he's still as bad as he is, I'll tell you what.
They may keep him,
but they're not going to pay him anything.
Yeah, like 2022. Yeah, but then you can't be like, all right, we need to. Then you end up in the position that we're at right now, not developing anybody in the back end, not, you know what I mean? Like, it's got to be,
dude, a shit sandwich, something in the pipeline. I'm not trying to call Jonathan Abram a shit sandwich. What I'm saying is if he can't do the job, regardless of where you picked him in the draft, he can't do the job. What I'm saying is you have so many people on the field at one time in one position, which is the DBs. They're the most, you have the most out of anything is DBs on the field at one time.
Yeah.
So you need to have more of them. And if they're not playing, you need to create that mentality of competition where I need to step up no matter where I was drafted. I need to step up and play well or I'm gone, because these guys, they're ready to take my spot. This undrafted free agent, this seventh rounder, the sixth round kid, he's playing better than me. He's going to take my fucking job.
And DB is the one spot now with our current roster where you're right, but I say we go veterans and not youth. With what, you know, on top of what we already have, everything else go youth, younger linebacker, younger defensive tackles, younger defensive ends, start building the pipeline development players. DBs, let's get a veteran presence in there. So these guys aren't lost and running into each other. Like it's like a three Stooges skit. Last one, Dick Vitale. Love the video. Hudson was top paid center. I'm with you. It hurt, but it's the NFL. He should have restructured and stayed. I'm sorry. The whole world got COVID, but it's where we are. I mean, I struggle to blame Rodney Hudson on his exit, because he did everything we asked of him. He was absolutely fantastic. He got a good deal on a team that's frankly in a better position to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
How can we be mad at the Rod? How can we, like, why would he, the best player on the team, take a hit in his pay? To be a Raider? I mean, they say they have a winning culture.
You talk about having a winning culture, and the teams that are on winning cultures do this. Look at what Ndamukong Suh did. Mm-hmm. He wants to run it back. He took shit money. He took nothing to stay. And if he felt like he wanted to build something with the Raiders, he could have. Does he have to? Definitely not.
Yeah.
Definitely not. He doesn't have to. So I'm not saying that he should have or he could have or whatever. I'm saying is the winning cultures, that is what happens. You look at in different sport, Tim Duncan took these very short, small dollar contracts so there was more money to spend on the people around him. Mm-hmm. And he won championships. He won as many as Kobe did, but he won them spread out more. He didn't win them in chunks like Kobe. He got hot. He got three in a row, and then he got two in a row, and he got three here. Like, so it was like in chunks. He got his in chunks. Tim Duncan was elite level for his entire career, and that's part of the reason why. And you see, I mean, I don't think he's hating on Hudson. Yeah, he top eight center. It hurt that he left, but that's the nature of the NFL. Get younger, you got that guy that can play just as good for less money. You got to make the move.
All right, well, that's it for this episode of the Autumn Windbags. Hope you had a great time. We'll be back next week as free agency starts to wrap down and the draft quickly approaching. April 1st, this is
hopefully,
coming
out. Hopefully, you take off that damn hat next time.
It's staying on for this whole show. It only needs to be this one show. UCLA Bruins, kicking ass in every possible way. Who's USC playing in the Final Four? Oh wait, they didn't make it that far. Until then,
funny.
Knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We appreciate and love you guys for it. Go ahead and comment, like, subscribe on all the platforms you listen to on this show, YouTube, and of course, all of our social media as well. Until next time, later.